Representative Sharp, Representative Larson, Representative Ulmer, Representative Jacko, Representative Copen, and Representative Boyer.
And Phillips.
And Representative Phillips. We're going to take two bills and Representative Brown, 194 and 238, both Senate bills first, and then hopefully our chairs will be here to move into SB or HB 15 at that time. We're going to start with Senate Bill 238. Representative Jacko, would you like to start this discussion while Martha Stewart is on her way?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I did have a similar piece of legislation on the House side here. I think there have been some changes made to this legislation. I'm not exactly sure what they are. I think they might have... let me just tell you, essentially what this legislation does is it establishes the Rural Development Initiative Fund, which is the intention is to get some money out into rural Alaska for establishing businesses, and I think it's in the applicable communities are under 5,000. And I'm not prepared to talk to this legislation. What it does, Mr. Chairman.
We're waiting on Martha Stewart.
Okay. I think they took in the Senate, I think they took the equity section out of it and changed the made to shelf for providing collateral.
Representative
Copenet? Not a question. Not only are these loans for small communities of 5,000 or less, but they are what are called in the banking business small loans. That is, they are 100,000, 200,000 at the most. Those may not be small in our terms, but typically private banks in Alaska have found themselves reluctant to deal with essentially what might be called retail banking. And so this offers a, sets up an account which works in cooperation with the communities and various small groups, small value-added fisheries processors, for example, industries. I know in the interior, we have had a sort of pilot program started with relatively little or no money, and mostly in the Tanana Chief region, and it has been very successful, so I would commend it. And now I'll turn it over to the Senator's staff to give the rest of the pitch.
Before we start, Governor Hickel, in his State of the Budget address, promised Representative Ivan and the people of Alaska that rural economic development was at the top of his agenda. And Senate Bill 238 establishes a rural economic development loan program in the Department of Community and Regional Affairs. And access to capital is widely recognized as a major roadblock for rural economic development. This bill will allow the department to make loans for working capital, equipment, construction, or other commercial purposes by a business in a community with a population of 5,000 people or less. And the limit is 100,000 per person or 200,000 to two or more persons. And maybe, Marla, you can go into a little bit of the explanation of the bill.
That is pretty much the gist of the bill. The department has submitted a revised fiscal note of $1 million. They're not asking for any money for operating costs because they feel like it'll take them at least 6 months to develop the regulations. And we are hoping that by this time next year they will be able to be making loans. Tom Peterson, I believe, is here from the Department of Community and Regional Affairs to answer any other questions you might have about the bill. Or I'll try and answer any that you might have.
Representative Jacko.
Marla, can you tell me, did they make any additional changes in this legislation other than what went with the legislation.
The Senate Finance the Senate CNRA Committee deleted the section that would have allowed equity investments because they felt that that was just too risky at this time. They wanted them to set up the program, and if we need to make changes later, you know, we could look at things. The Senate Finance Committee put a loan interest floor on the bill, 6%, and they also required that a reasonable amount of money from non-state sources must be committed to these projects, so that if you had funds from like ANA grants or CDBG or other federal sources, that also would have to be committed to these loan projects.
Thank
and
you,
those
Chair.
Are the only changes that were made.
Representative Brown.
Thank you. In the fiscal note, this is the explanatory attachment in the third paragraph. What is the existing RDF operation system?
Well, in the
does that sound for Rural Development Fund?
Tom Peterson.
That does stand for Rural Development Fund.
Rural Development Initiative.
Actually, Tom Peterson is here from the Department of Community and Regional Affairs, and he'd be the best one to speak to that.
Thank you, Marla.
Mm-hmm. Yes, thank you. In answer to your question, Representative Brown, the Rural Development Fund is a loan program that we have used federal HUD block grant monies to drive in all communities other than Anchorage because of its urban status as with the federal regs. The program that is in this bill here is to provide a little better outreach and with less constraint than the feds have given, since we have to deal with low moderate income guidelines and also the with municipalities, which is they act as a co-sponsor to the state in regards to getting those loans out, but is to be operated within the operational staff component that deals with the RDF.
Representative Jocko.
Madam Chairman, I just want to mention that the commissioner is here and he's been a strong advocate of this legislation. You may want to have an opportunity to say a few words.
Okay,
Representative
Brown. Yes,
I've been holding my hand for the last 5 minutes here. I have a red flag.
I'll defer to Representative Phillips.
Okay. I wanted the CRA guy here. I've been here a long time, and I've seen loan programs come and go. What makes this so different from the ones that come and gone?
We believe this program will give us better flexibility where the federal programs have created limitations, restrictions to their more broadening impact just on a national basis. The program here is envisioned to be developed very close to very many state-funded programs in other areas of the United States. It provides essentially participatory funding sources from other areas, whether they be private, the federal, private also including not only through some financial institutions may be in existence, but also such types of development funds and endowment funds as well. It also creates a better financial mechanism for the department to exercise its authority in broadening and diversifying the economy of rural Alaska.
Okay, in the legislation on page 2, line 14, give me a sense of comfort as far as what conditions you're going to establish for the loans.
That is in reference to the interest and collateral, sir?
Yeah, it's be page 2, line 14.
Page 2, line 14.
Let's say the department may, or department by regulation, may establish other conditions for loans. And I want to have a sense of a level of comfort that we're not establishing another loan program, and then 5 years from now we have a bunch of defaults and the state's holding the bag. So I know you can't give me all kinds of details, but you can give me some generally where you're heading and how are you going to collateralize these loans and what conditions are going to be placed upon these people to repay the loans.
When you're testifying, please state your name for the record. That would help our process.
Madam Chairman, if I may respond to Representative McClain, Representative Ellis. My name is Edgar Blashford. I'm the Commissioner of the Department. Representative, we're following the guidelines set down by Governor Hickel that we be as creative as possible in developing the rules and regulations. We would like to use the initiatives of the local people, but also require that there be some equity in the process, whether it's sweat equity or financial capital. We have looked at many loan programs of the past, and we are determined that this program can work because we have the commitment from the governor, as the chairperson recognized in her opening comments. But the comfort level is that the governor doesn't want this program to be, a replicate of past programs.
Well, Madam Chair, I think the concept's commendable, and I just don't want this thing to fall on its own weight and then not give people a second chance. I want to make sure it's done right the first time, so I wanted to get a sense of where the department is going with this.
Representative Brown and then Larson.
Thank you. Could you elaborate a little bit about the language on page 1, lines 13 and 14? The commissioner may use money in the account to protect the state's security interest in collateral on loans. I don't really understand what that's saying. And I guess a continuation of what Representative Phillips is asking, is collateral required, or is the idea here that a lot of the folks who would be interested in using this fund don't have much collateral, or certainly $100,000 worth of collateral, or what does this mean?
Commissioner Blatchford.
Madam Chairman, Representative Brown. We would like to be as creative as possible in recognizing what a person has with collateral. Oftentimes what we find in the banking industry is that the industry lacks as much faith in rural Alaska as we have. If a person identifies collateral and it is to the satisfaction of people who know rural Alaska, then we will use that. I don't know whether that gives you any comfort level, Representative Brown, but we recognize that rural Alaskans have a great deal of collateral that is often unrecognized by typical lending institutions.
Well, what is envisioned about protecting the state's security interest in collateral on loans?
We would require, signing of notes. We'd require signing, of deeds of trust or, anything that would protect the state's security or interest in the loan.
So money from the fund itself would be held aside to pay it off, to secure collateral?
Or perhaps to use in an escrow account agreement where once equity is gained through the development of the business, we can release the escrow bearing account on it as a relationship to develop the necessary collateral for the project.
Representative Brown, maybe if you look at page 2, you'll see on line 11, the department shall require collateral for each loan made under this section and shall require that a reasonable amount of money from other non-state sources be committed for use on any project.
And thank you. Can I ask one more?
Representative Brown.
Thank you. does this allow you the flexibility to have a delayed payback? In other words, if somebody is just starting up a business, will they have to make an immediate payback, or is the flexibility there for?
Madam Chairman, Representative Brown, we intend to be as creative as possible and also to protect the state's interest in any loan that we have out there. Payback, if we believe that the entrepreneur will be successful, and under normal banking guidelines, that protection would not be clearly seen, then we would be have a greater risk in the loan. I believe, Madam Chairman, Representative Brown, that the department has more faith in rural Alaska, and this administration has more faith in rural Alaska than perhaps those people in some of the private banking sector.
Any other questions? Representative Copeland?
There was a study done for ADA that indicated that ADA had a liquidity ratio of 39% last year. In fact, 2 years before, it had been 47%. That means money readily available. The state banks had, state chartered banks had a liquidity ratio of 95%, and nationally chartered banks at 54% as of last June. These are extraordinarily high rates of liquidity, which indicate that they have a lot of cash available for loans. Why haven't they been making them available for people? I mean, we have to go ahead and set this kind of thing up precisely because the finance sector hasn't been willing to do that. Do you have any notion on what we can say on that?
Madam Chairman, if I may respond to the representative from Fairbanks, you're asking me kind of a
maybe I ought to pass then.
Yeah, well, you're putting me on the spot there, and all I can say is that you know, this administration and this department has more faith in rural Alaska than some sectors in the private banking industry.
Representative Larson.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chairman. I think most of my questions were answered with the questions that Representative Brown had, but in reply, I guess, to Representative Phillips' earlier comment, what makes this different than some of the past loan programs that we have had? I think one of the things that makes this different is, and I agree with the concept, but the collateral requirements and everything are so high, I doubt if anyone will ever be able to afford to take a loan.
Any other questions? Thank you very much. We have Representative Ivan to testify.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Representative Ivan, and I'm here this morning at the request of the bill sponsor, Senator Adams, to speak on his bill, Senate Bill 238, which is relating to the Rural Development Initiative Program. And I would like to thank the previous witnesses for speaking in support of this bill. As it may have been presented, purpose of this program is to make loans available to small business persons in rural Alaska. And certainly the intent is to be used for working capital, first of all, and purchase of equipment or construction of business facilities or other commercial purposes by small business people located in rural Alaska across the state. As if you would remember, the governor in his State of the Budget address had made a promise that certainly he will look at rural economic development across rural Alaska, and I thank him for that, and I hope that I hope that this committee will give him that opportunity to and give it a favorable consideration when you deliberate on it. You have probably heard over and over again that certainly high unemployment exists out in the, for example, my district villages. And certainly this results from hopelessness, no jobs existing out there, which certainly result in alcohol and drug abuse and certainly suicides. Some of our high school students are taught and promised on the type of jobs that they could take on. And once they graduate and leave that building, they have nothing to go to. Few jobs exist in my community, for example, one position for postmaster, the other one for high school custodian, et cetera, not very many. But I think this initiative, rural initiative program, will certainly address that problem in the long run. And our situation today, as far as the oil is concerned, I think we're going to go down gradually, as I've been hearing, and certainly this is one investment which I believe would be in the best interest of the state. And not only that, will it provide employment and business opportunities, but certainly give our folks a chance to take a crack at it. I'm sure, you know, the positive results will be good, and I thank you very much for your consideration of this bill.
Thank you very much, Representative. Any questions?
Ready for a motion.
Representative Sharp?
Just maybe a statement, if I may. I think this is probably one of the most exciting ways to stimulate economic development in rural areas, to maybe get some leverage, the clusters of labor pool out there, and the basic knowledge of the area and the resources into probably worldwide products if given the right equipment and storage facilities and so forth to do some good out there. So with the knowledge of the present commissioner and background in business and roots in the rural area, I'm sure that he'll watch that program pretty close. I'm sort of excited to see how it works. So that's all I've got to say.
Representative Boyer.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I have a question of the department again, if I may.
Thank you very much.
On page 2, the language of sub C on line 3 says the commissioner may use money from the fund to provide for loan information officers. And I'm curious how many current loan information officers the department has already authorized and working in the field under 155.
Yes. Madam Chair, Representative Boyer, Tom Peterson with the Department of Community and Regional Affairs. At present, although the loan information officers are in statute, we do not have people that fulfill that role.
Even in your housing division, you don't have any loan?
Not specifically to the LIO. We're hoping that with the regulation development that those people, the loan examiners and economic development specialists, will be doing essentially the jobs that are the description for the loan information officers. That is, not only doing packaging of loans, but also coordinating with other state and federal agencies to provide the leverage funds that may be necessary to develop the package in order to have the business financed.
Madam Chairman?
Yes,
if I may respond to Representative Boyer. The governor has appointed a mini-cabinet on rural economic development, and we're working very closely with commerce and fish and game and natural resources and a couple of other departments. So we see a great deal of sharing of existing personnel.
Madam Chairman, I think that on page 1, where this is money the fund can be or may be appropriated for the cost of administering the program, is sufficient authority for us to appropriate funds sometime for those loan information officers. And it seems that it's a little inconsistent with C, which is carte blanche authority to use the money from the fund for loan officers. And I think that what I'd like to do is move that we delete C on page 2. I think you have the authority to come, I mean, clearly can come back to the legislature and get appropriations for loan officers. And I'd prefer it in a more straightforward fashion like that, and so I would move that we delete sub C on lines 3 and 4 on page 2.
Any objection? There's a motion. Representative Phillips.
Question here. I guess it's the intent for the department to either use personnel under their jurisdiction as well as commerce, right? The okay. If that's the direction, why can't you have the private sector put the package together and have the funding backed up by the state, like we do with Alaska Housing?
Madam Chairman, Representative Phillips, we're not foreclosing any of this activity being done. We may consider the idea, we may use the private sector. What we're doing is trying to be as creative as possible and to use the money for the private entrepreneur, and as little of that being retained by the public sector in the department. Money must, we believe the money should be out there as much of it as possible.
We should not preclude the option of using banks.
We are not, Madam Chair, Representatives, we are not precluding the opportunity to use banks or other entities in the private sector or other agencies in the federal side or the state side.
All right.
Okay. Any other questions? Representative Barnes?
Well, Madam Chairman, the motion that was made by Representative Boyer, I'm not sure that we want to do that because it would seem to me certainly that you would need somebody with loan skills to be able to make the determination on these loans. And I think if we're packaging a piece of legislation, that we certainly should leave that in there.
Mm-hmm. Representative Boyer?
Well, you know, I'm not persuaded that you can't do that, but clearly you want it to be a self-sustaining fund. You want to be able to administer it from the fund as it grows, as we appropriate more money to it in the future. And that language, or that flexibility, is provided on page one by saying that money in the fund may be appropriated for the cost of administering the program. That language is all-inclusive. That means for loan officers. That means for the deputy commissioner's travel if he wants to do it. So I think it's fairly broad, very sweeping. We generally don't give this broad authority to folks and then also give them even broader authority to dip into the fund for loan information officers in this case. And I just think that we ought to keep some... We haven't authorized any positions. This would give them carte blanche authority to establish positions if they didn't have them, to fund PCNs that may be vacant. That's not the way we normally do business around here. And so I'd feel much more comfortable if we ran these things back through us, and that's why I made a motion.
Okay. Representative Larson?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chairman. The only concern that I have is that this is the 119th day. And this is a bill that still has to be through the House, if amended. After the House, it's going to have to go over to the Senate to concurrence. And I'm just afraid that time's running out on us unless it's really a significant change, something that we feel very strongly about. I'd rather have the bill in its present form than not have it in the amended form.
Okay, any other questions? Representative Jacob?
Well, one thing I would like is to have the commissioner comment on the proposed amendment, but my feeling on it is that it was intentional to have it separate administration and the loan officers. There's very much of a need to have loan officers. There's no question about that. I think the intention was to have the loan officers out in the field in different parts of the state of Alaska, not only to provide, put the packages together for the businesses, but also to provide additional backup technical assistance to ensure that the businesses work. I think all too often we look at these pieces of legislation and try to develop something for rural Alaska. We try to impose the same standards that we use in urban centers on rural Alaska, and that's been the problem all along. So I would prefer that we leave the flexibility in the legislation for the Department of Community and Regional Affairs, who knows rural Alaska better than any of the other departments, to develop the loans that would be necessary to make this thing a success. And I would oppose the proposed amendment.
Commissioner Blatchford.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Representative Jacko. One of the great strengths of the department is that we do have people out there in the field in our regional offices, and our people are required in those regional offices, Kotzebue, Nome, Bethel, Billingham, Kodiak, to fly out to their villages and to work directly with the people. And, I also share Representative Larson's concern that we are nearing the end of the legislative session. And that we ought to work to see that this bill passes through this legislature.
Representative Boyer.
Madam Chairman, I'd like to see this bill pass too. And I'm going to be honest and say that everything in this universe can pass in the next 3 days. Everything. We know how business is around here too. So I'm not persuaded by Representative Larson's or anybody else's argument that we won't do it. But in the spirit of goodwill and good faith and confidence in the process, I'm going to withdraw my motion. And I would support the bill as is on its face.
Any other comments? Okay, what is the wish of the committee? Representative Boyer.
Madam Chairman, I would move that we pass out the CS for Senate Bill number 238, Finance with Individual Recommendations, and I'm going to put a little twist on it, though, that the fiscal note not accompany the bill, but that we include it in our capital budget as was originally intended by the administration in all of its backup, and I think as envisioned. And we have control of the capital budget, and I would just make the motion that we include the $1 million as a capitalization of that loan in the capital budget. That way it wouldn't have a lot.
There is a motion on the floor. Any objections to that motion? Hearing none, motion carried. Representative Brown.
I have a question before we...
Okay.
objecting to his motion just for mm-hmm. purpose of clarifying, not having it in writing here. Do you envision the capital budget appropriation being contingent on passage of this bill, as the fiscal note would be? Or is it just, what is your intention with respect to the effective date if it's included in the capital budget?
Representative Boyer.
Well, Madam Chairman, if the bill doesn't pass, there is no fund, and the $1 million stays in the general fund. It's appropriated to nothing. So I'm confident that the bill is going to pass, and that on the effective date of the capital budget, which would be July 1,
the appropriation. Would you accept a motion to, or amendment to your motion to provide in the language of the capital appropriation that it's effective on the date that this becomes law?
Not a matter.
Okay, there's several other people. Representative Larson and then Representative Barnes.
Once again, Madam Chairman, and I guess I'm asking a question of you, who's is chairing the capital budget on the House side. Mm-hmm. But it's my understanding that the capital budget is on the Senate side right now. So this would be something then that you would have to prepare to present it into the budget on the Senate side, because I'm sure when the capital budget comes over to us, like it did last year with 12 minutes to go in the session, that we're not going to have a chance to amend or add and throw it back to them for their concurrence. So I just...
Representative Boyer and then Barnes.
I would just say that, you know, it's a Senate bill, and it's not an this is a fairly influential senator who sponsored it, and I'm sure that there's no problem getting this in the capital budget. And for practical purposes, for all the people around here that have voted against a high operating budget, this accomplishes your purpose in keeping that operating figure low on the operating side. This is a capital item. It ought to be capitalized. It ought to be in the capital budget. And it will happen if we decide that it will.
Representative Boyer, just for your information, before Representative Barnes, before you speak, I will object to the motion to put it in the capital at this time, because we're still negotiating, and this is a bill that has the fiscal note, and it should be accompanied by it. Okay, Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Well, you said very well what I was going to say, that I felt as though we needed to send this fiscal note with this bill. Indeed, I don't see how we could pass it out without a fiscal note, and we still have not dealt with that in the closeout of the budget, the operating budget, and trust me, $1 million is not going to make that much difference in the size of that operating budget.
It's a bigger.
That's my point.
Yeah.
Madam Chairman, I'll withdraw my motion. I just move then the accompanying fiscal note with individual recommendation.
Okay, there is a motion on the floor to move out Senate Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 238 with the accompanying fiscal note with individual recommendations. Any objections? Hearing none, motion carried.
I'd like to, Madam Chair, like to comment that being in the operating budget, it's not a capitalized amount. We will have to deal with it next year and capitalize.
Thank you.
Carefully.
You are.
It's Sunday.
That's why I'm ready.
The next item on the agenda is committee substitute for sponsors substitute Senate Bill 194, hepatitis B shots for service providers. Senator Menard.
I have two.
Thank you. Yeah, and I hope to have a better time since you brought it up. But all things work to the good in the end, right?
Yeah. Trying to fill up the cemetery.
Yeah. But we're going to move from that item to hepatitis B, and this Senate bill is similar to a House bill that you had before you, and the Senate bill requires that the Department of Health and Social Services is to provide the testing and vaccination programs for all volunteers outside of municipalities. And municipalities with health powers will provide it themselves, and the Department of Public Safety will provide it for the state troopers. And most of the municipalities and the state troopers are providing for it now. It does have a fiscal note, Madam Chair, and the fiscal note is $30,000.
Representative Boyer.
Are you ready for a motion?
There is somebody that wishes to testify on the bill.
Can I give him a warning?
Yeah.
You got the votes, you vote. When you don't, talk.
Thank you very much, Senator. Iola Young.
Madam Chairman, I would move that we pass out the CS4 sponsor substitute Senate Bill number 194 with the individual recommendations and the two fiscal notes, the 10 and the accompanying $30,000 fiscal note as well.
Okay, there's a motion on the floor to move the bill out of committee with individual recommendations and the accompanying fiscal notes. Any objections? Hearing none, motion carried.
Thank you.
Okay, we're going to recess.
We could go into 70. Mike isn't going to be here. But...
What time is our
floor session? High noon. 2 o'clock.
Plenty of time.
Okay, we'll be hearing Senate Bill 70 at this time.
Taxes.
I think I'm for this.
Hey. Sorry. Is good? You can speak good, can't you? Just trying to do your work, Scott.
Okay, Senate Bill 70, taxation by municipalities, by Senator Drew Pierce.
Scott.
Okay, Scott, would you please join us?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Scott Burgess with the Alaskan Municipal League. Senator Pierce should be on her way up. I certainly would appreciate her introducing her bill. This is the second year she's carried this bill. It was introduced at our request. It does three things. Basically, it would make state agency property a very narrowly defined segment of that property, that which is acquired through foreclosure or deed in lieu of foreclosure and retained as an investment subject to local taxation. Currently, HFC pays local taxes on investment property, but PERS, TERS, and ADA do not. Again, we're only talking about that property which is acquired through foreclosure or deed in foreclosure, basically goes back to the state. In many cases, this property is lease property or rental property, and municipalities, of course, are providing services to that property, water and sewer, and other services that protect that investment, and yet there's no revenue to offset that cost, and in fact, this property would be in competition with private sector property, which enjoys those services and which pays taxes on it. The second aspect of the bill would make property acquired after December 31st, 1990, by a municipality subject to taxation by the municipality in which the property is located, except a borough could not tax the property owned by a city within that borough. Obviously, the theory behind tax exemption is the public shouldn't tax and pay itself money, but when you have one municipality locating property in another municipality, the same public, they aren't the same public, and therefore the one that foregoes the revenue does not benefit from the property. Again, where you have a municipality within a city within a borough, the borough is the general public overall. The borough would not tax that property. Thirdly, we clarify that property owned by the federal government is subject to local taxation to the extent required by federal law. Again, this is a clarification. If the federal law says that the property is tax exempt, then it would be tax exempt. Currently, FDIC, FSLIC, HUD, Veterans Administration pay taxes or payment in lieu of taxes, but the Farmers Home Administration have questioned the Alaska statute, and in fact in one borough, Mat-Su borough, went to court saying that the state law is not clear, that they have to pay these taxes, and the borough lost that case, my understanding. They have been paying taxes elsewhere, but they say, again, this clarifies that unless federal law says specifically they're exempt from taxation, that they would pay that. So again, we support the legislation and ask your support. Be glad to answer any questions.
Representative Brown.
Could you summarize under this bill as it stands who is or is not covered? or in other words, if there is another statute that exempts someone from taxation, is this changing that? That's what I'm not clear about. Like, what's the status of property held by the university, property held by the Alaska Railroad, property held by ADA, TERS, PERS, and AHFC? If you can just tell us, are those covered or not
in
this bill?
If you look at the bill, the statute with the Section 1, the reference to AS-14, that is TERS. The overall in Section 2.
Okay, if I get it. So in Section 1, we're saying TERS property is taxable.
Again, that very limited aspect of it where they have property which they've acquired through foreclosure or deed in lieu of foreclosure, not just everything that they own and held as an investment. Basically, a rental piece of rental property or lease property or whatever. And then Section 2 is the general section. I'll come back to that, but to answer your question specifically, if I can. Going to Section 4, you would deal with PERS. In Section 5, you deal with ADA. And then if you go back again to the specifically the operable section, Section 2, which is AS-2945-030A, this is the statute which you remember SB to say that specifically their property, land, is tax exempt from municipal taxation, except the interest in that. In other words, if the property becomes developed and is leased out to somebody, that leasehold interest is taxable, but the land underneath is not. And so it is added to this section, and that's where these provisions are added. And that is the primary section in terms of taxation, municipal exemption from municipal taxation for property.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Brown.
So, how about the railroad?
The railroad, I'm not sure what section that is, but it specifically has a provision in the statute that addresses the railroad that says it is not subject to municipal taxation.
And this bill doesn't cover the railroad?
That's correct.
How about the university?
The university, I believe there is an amendment to be offered. If
it's in the packet.
If it's in the packet. And we don't have any problem with the language. Again, it clarifies that the university. It looks like it's. I have a copy. I assume it's the same one you have. 514-91, Cook, page 2, line 7 of the bill. Would add after taxable. This subparagraph does not apply to federal land granted to the University of Alaska under AS-1440. 380 or 1440-390, or to other land granted to the university by the state to replace land that has been granted under AS-1440-380 or 1440-390. Again, that property is exempt, except the operable section above on page 2, line 3, a private leasehold contract or other interest. In other words, that aspect is taxable, but the land and property is not. In other words, if the university leases out a piece of property for a gas station, then that becomes taxable, but the property as it sits there is not. And I believe there's a letter from.
How about for a spaceport?
You did pass legislation, I believe. I'm not sure where that bill was, and we certainly raised that issue, but. And you exempted it from taxation. There was a provision in there that says that the spaceport may make payments in lieu of taxes, where in fact they receive municipal services.
Representative Larson.
Thank you. As a former borough mayor, and I've been reminded here by my colleague that I could favor this bill, as a person who is very interested in PERS and TERS and keeping the viability of our retirement system, we are being asked to make a decision that is contrary to the decision that the boards of those two retirement systems have chosen to make for themselves. Because as PERS and TERS wish to do so, they could have paid those taxes. So we are affecting in a very small way the viability of those two retirement programs, but in a big way, I'm sure we are going to be affecting their investment potential in Alaska, because they will not invest in the future in Alaska real estate.
So those are the two sides of the story as I see it.
Mr. Chairman, just to respond to that issue, and I, you know, we've had this discussion as we've gone through this process. One, again, let me emphasize, we're dealing with a very narrow segment. We're talking about property that's acquired through foreclosure or deed in lieu of foreclosure. In other words, it's not necessary property that they sought to purchase and hold as an investment. It's property that's returned to them. We're talking about 0.01% in terms of an impact on the fund. This isn't, you know, on the retirement system, which presume hopefully and is occurring now. That property is back on the market as the market has improved in this state. Understand also that municipalities contribute as employers half of the TERS and PERS contributions. So to some degree, we recognize that to some degree we're paying that. But this is a cost, my view, of doing business. It's an investment. You pay an investment manager to invest your funds. Hopefully, as those investments, the return on them is greater than the cost of that investment. So, again, I think that you have to recognize that the services are basically protecting that property. If the services weren't there, it'd be a really bad investment because it could burn down, it could be vandalized or whatever.
Representative Ulmer.
Well, I would just note that given the volatility of Alaska real estate, I'm not sure I really like the idea of the retirement funds investing heavily in Alaska real estate anyway. And we certainly have, through HFC, another very legitimate funding source, as well as ADA, for the financing of real estate investments from the standpoint of making sure that development happens. So that policy aspect of it, I think I agree with. My main concern about the situation is that I think municipalities face a diminution of their real estate property value and their ability to get taxes based exclusively on ownership. And I think it's a good bill, and I think it clears up a situation that could get much worse if it's a loophole that's allowed to continue to exist.
We do have the prime sponsor from the Senate with us. Senator, would you like to address the bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Senator Drew Pierce. I represent Senate District G in Anchorage. It's Tunigan, Sandlake, and Spinard. And I apologize for not being here when you first started on the bill. I do appreciate your bringing Senate Bill 70 before you. We got the bill through to the House floor last year, and unfortunately it died, so we're bringing it back again. You've had a good explanation from Scott. It is, of course, something that is a priority of the Municipal League. You do have Amendment J3 by Cook, that is the University of Alaska Amendment, because they are a land grant school and they do hold those lands as for investment purposes. I would ask that the committee make that amendment. We worked it out with the university, and it gets them out of the box. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Representative Kopanen.
Move the amendment, page 2, line 7, after taxable insert, subparagraph, supplied by Senator Pierce.
Is there objection to the amendment? Without objection, motion carries. Are there questions of the sponsor? Anyone else to testify on this measure? We're going to hold it until the chair gets back. He asked that we hold it until he returns. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, while we have a minute, I just want to state my statements were not in opposition to the bill, but as I reminded this committee before, anytime I see an effect on PERS or TERS, I'm going to point it out so that we know what we're doing.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator.
PERS and TERS issue, along with many others, is definitely a policy issue. It was the Senate's feeling that it was unfair to treat all of the state's investment corporations and PERS and TERS sorts of compensations the same, and I think that that's a fair way, and I do think that the municipalities throughout the state do deserve to have a tax base, and we should make sure that we help them keep that tax base.
Thank you. Oh, Representative Brown.
Sure. Senator, did you give any thought to the railroad or its property taxes?
Well, I've given thought to the railroad in terms of taxation in the past. As a matter of fact, one of the bills that the municipality of Anchorage had asked introduced in the legislature 2 years ago was a specific bill that would tax the railroad, and I introduced that. It didn't go far. I would certainly be willing to have that policy decision be looked at again. I think it doesn't, it is much the same sort of situation that the university is. The railroad has land specifically for investment purposes that we purchased from the federal government. I don't think it fits directly into this bill, but it is something that definitely the legislature should look at and make a policy decision there. I don't remember whether the municipality of Anchorage asked again this year for that legislation.
I would just remark that we got to be mindful of the government taxing government syndrome, and that as an exercise I hope we'll go through in the next year, some of us will go through HCR 17, or I think is what the number is, the Governmental Rules Task Force is up in the Senate Finance Committee this morning, and hopefully it will be reviewing a lot of these related types of issues over the next year. Representative Ballmer.
Oh, I think it's important to distinguish, though, government taxing government. We're not talking about government taxing a governmental structure. We're talking about one part of government going out equivalent to a private developer and simply acquiring properties, and the result of that being removing it from the tax base. And so there's a very important distinction here that I think makes the general principle of government taxing government clearly is inappropriate. This is just as clearly inappropriate, I think. And they're very, very different animals.
We'll just hold the bill until the chairman returns. We'll take a brief recess until the chairman returns.
Finance Committee meeting will come back to order.
Out there in the
Thank you all for coming.
We could just get a couple more members.
One, two, three, four, five. Five. Get Ramo on that.
There he goes. We have a quorum. I'm going to move an amendment to delete Section 1 and Section 4 of Senate Bill 70. That leaves all of the provisions except the PERS and TERS funds.
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Is there objection?
Okay. Could we get Senator
Pierce? Senator Pierce. Who objected?
Randy.
Where's he?
Randall.
Oh, there he is.
Randall.
Senator Pierce, we just wanted to get on the record whether or not you felt you could live with the suggested amendment.
Okay, as I said, Mr. Chairman, it is a policy decision that needs to be made by the committee. I certainly can live with it because I think the rest of the bill is extremely important.
Representative Larson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think I'm going to support the amendment, too, for this reason. Whatever is necessary to make the PERS and TERS whole is going to come from the employer anyway. And therefore, in this way, it'll just retain the status quo.
That's true.
What is the amendment? I don't seem to have it.
Or the verbal.
It's conceptual. Technical.
Clean up. Revisor.
It deletes Section 1 and Section 4. PERS and TERS. Is there further objection? Without objection, the amendment is adopted. Representative Boyer.
Mr. Chairman, so we move to two amendments, this one and the amendment for the university.
Oh, yes, okay.
Mr. Chairman, I would now move that we pass out the Finance Committee substitute with individual recommendations and the various fiscal notes.
Is there objection? Without objection, so moved. The next bill we'll take up is Senate Bill 15. House Bill 15.
Sorry.
House Bill 15.
Back into the
fourth row.
Oh, yeah.
Back into the fourth
row. Okay.
Someone can move. Okay. Bill.
Okay.
House Bill 15 on the floor.
Okay, we have before us amendment number 11. There was a motion pending by Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I could, I'd like to amend my motion to the $3 million instead of $1.5 million.
I have no objections, Mr. Chairman.
Amendment number 11.
This is the analog.
$5 million appropriation for analog. Motion has been made to reduce it $3
million.
Is there objection? Representative Phillips.
What are we reducing?
Reducing the... Well, that's going to be up to the discretion of the administration who put this together. So reducing the amount, I think... Malcolm Roberts?
Roberts.
I'm Malcolm Roberts, the Office of the Governor. Do you have a question? I'm sorry, Mr.
Yeah, Representative Brown.
I just wanted to make a brief comment. I think it's really important that the message that goes out with this money be balanced and not overstate the case. And I just encourage you and the administration to involve legislative leadership and people from the area in the review of the message before it's distributed nationally. And I realize you can't write these things by committee, but I do think it's important to present a real balanced view that's not going to get us into a lot of controversy with the national environmental groups, and to, you know, show that, yes, we know there are problems, but we're working on them. Instead of just saying everything's great, everything's wonderful, I think that kind of message is open to challenge and will create more problems for us than it will help us with our goal of opening the analog.
Great.
Representative Ulmer.
Thank you. Mr. Roberts, as you and I have discussed before, although I support ANWR, I have not supported appropriations for lobbying ANWR in the past, either for the Cooper administration or for this administration, because of my concerns about whether or not it would be really a drop in the bucket, particularly for television. I would just like to encourage you to use the money in a way that maximizes citizen participation in the congressional effort. I think it is really unrealistic to think that this amount of money can really buy enough TV time to influence public opinion on a grand scale. I do happen to think that it makes a tremendous difference for congressmen to hear from people that have direct interests in Alaska, who have experience in Alaska. I think that kind of personal commentary can make a big difference, and I would just encourage you to use a fair proportion of money in that way.
Representative Larson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a concern moving from $5 million to $3 million simply because I feel there is a job that needs to be done. And I guess I would like to ask Mr. Roberts just how he feels in relation to the amendment, and could they do the job that they feel needs to be done if we agreed to the amendment and it was reduced to $3
million? Well, thank you, Representative Larson. We will give it everything we have with whatever the legislature decides. This is one of the governor's top priorities and has been from the outset. As you've seen in the plan, we have felt that we should attack it on all fronts. And if you indeed decide to give us the $5 million, which is what we have designed, our belief is that we will be more effective. But we're going to go ahead with whatever Alaska and Alaska's representatives decide to do in terms of this issue. We feel now is the hour. We've had a history of using a multimedia approach for tourism and seafood marketing. We feel it has been very effective if it's targeted. We feel we can use television to do that with this issue also. But if your wisdom, you feel that $5 million is too much, we'll work with whatever we have available. Commissioner Blatchford has agreed to sit with me. Would we welcome a chance to take any questions or comments if you have any questions of him, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Phillips.
Mr. Chairman, I only have three questions and then I'm prepared to vote on it. I'm just going to limit it to three. Do you have a lobbying firm already established? Designated to do this? That's question number one.
Yeah.
Question
Do you want to give all three questions?
Yeah, that's how I'm going to expedite this
real
quick. Question number two, you have a coordinator written in the fiscal note, and I'm just wondering if that's been established or who's going to be. And the third question is this money designated at convincing senators, the whole Senate, U.S. Senate, or just the committee process?
O'Connor and Hannon is the current lobbying firm that is under contract representing the state. That they were hired by the Cooper administration, and they're on contract to the end of this fiscal year. Our intent is to review that contract, go through the bidding process again, and redetermine who would be the most effective lobbying group at this with this particular mentality in Congress at the moment. The coordinator has not been picked yet. It would be an Alaskan, very familiar with the issue, and in terms of tapping Alaskans from across the state who want to help, and also familiar with Capitol Hill and working across America. And the third issue was please, Representative Phillips?
Is the money concentrated for the United States Senate as a whole, or just for the committees?
We see it in five phases. The first phase is almost behind us, the Senate Energy Committee. Then it's full Senate, then it's House Merchant Marine and Fisheries, full House, and then Conference Committee. And we would be targeting key districts across America that we think are swing votes and run mini campaigns in that district, really to help give many congressmen and senators who support us philosophically the political cover, if you will, to be able to illustrate to their people why it's in the national interest to open ANWR. They have that battle to fight, and we feel we can help them. So it would be a phased process in that regard.
Further questions? Representative Jackman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to state that I think I support this appropriation of, actually, I think $5 million have been more appropriate. I'm not too happy with reducing it to $3 million because I think it is a major job out there that needs to be done. As far as striking a balance, I would encourage the administration to use this money just to strike a balance, because I think there's an opposing force out there that's presenting a message that isn't exactly what the general population in the state of Alaska feels. Primarily, it is the environmentalist groups, and I think that we need to do this, even if this $5 million or $3 million or whatever it finally becomes to be would encourage our bringing ANWR online 1 year earlier. I think it'd still be $5 million well spent. I think that the people who are putting forth the opposing message out there already are not necessarily concerned about the revenue sources for the state of Alaska, not concerned about where we're going to be on down in the future as far as whether or not we're going to be able to have the money to spend on the basic needs that are not going to be met in the state of Alaska when the revenue source runs out. So I think it's good business practice. It's money well spent.
Further questions? Thank you.
Mr. Chairman. I agree with Representative Jacko. Having been in the department a short period of time, I see the need to generate new sources of revenue. And as we look towards the 21st century, I see some major problems developing in rural Alaska, and we need new sources of revenue to address some of those problems. The second reason that I would support the appropriation, Mr. Chairman, Madam Chairman, is the need to present a very positive image about Alaska. Having spent a great deal of time outside the state in various institutions, educational institutions, the image is that we Alaskans do not care about the environment, that we're all boomers. And I think that we have this wonderful opportunity to project Alaskans as caring and sensitive people about our environment. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I very much appreciate that, and I, for one, can tell you that I think that some people in this administration don't share at least my concerns for the environment, and I hope that when we send this message out that we don't at the same time send mixed messages with what the administration is doing, because I can tell you for certain that there's at least one legislator in this body who will go to Washington and point out whatever problems I feel there are with this administration and environmental concerns. And I want you to keep that firmly in mind and pass that on to the governor and the people in this administration that if you're going to give a message to Washington, D.C., you better make sure that message gets across to this legislature, too, and we'll be watching.
Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Kopanen.
Well, my feeling, as I've stated before, is that could better use $3 million to ensure that we get local hire indemnification for the people affected on the caribou, or get our full share of the royalties if and when it is developed, and to monitor adequately the environmental impact. I think the $3 million could also go to the school construction grant account, the rural development incentive fund that we've just run to capitalize that with a longer, more real long-term impact for the village safe water program. I think that to endorse the development of the Arctic National Wildlife Reserve without getting the assurances for Alaska's share of it, for getting Alaska and local hire and jobs, and getting those things nailed down beforehand is entirely premature.
Representative Sharp.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think that to reduce this down is penny wise and pound foolish. I think we've got to make sure we develop the resources, do what we can. It's an investment of future. I'm firmly convinced, after being down here for 3 years, there's going to be economic chaos in the rural area, particularly when the revenues start declining, because they have so many needs, and we've got to keep that revenue stream as high as we can under reasonable development terms that we establish. And this is one of our opportunities to help establish those terms. We need the money up front to do it.
Senator Barnes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was the one that introduced the amendment for $5 million. I've accepted the $3 million amendment, recognizing that if we find that there is more money that's needed when we come back next year, we can address that. I feel it's extremely important to get the program off the ground. I believe they'll be able to do that in an adequate way with the $3 million. I think that we all recognize that our revenue stream is declining. We have to find new sources of revenue. ANWR is one of our hopes. And I think we all recognize that it has to be done in an environmentally safe manner, and that, of course, is the message that we give to the American public. I do ask that the members of this committee support this $3 million appropriation, because I feel that it's absolutely urgent that we get this program before the American people, and the administration has no funds to move forward with at this time.
Representative Larson.
Yes, just procedure-wise, we have a motion to adopt $5 million, and that motion then has been amended to reduce it to $3 million, and that's
there is a proposed amendment.
To amend the amendment.
To amend it to $3 million. There's a motion to amend the amendment to $3 million.
And I ask the support of the committee on the $3 million.
Is there objections?
Objections.
There is objections. Place a call on the committee. Bad chance.
That is what we would be reducing it to $3 million, but not, the amendment doesn't carry the motion, does it?
Mr. Chairman, I'll just speak to, if I could. I think that at this level, we would be able to do TV on some of the cable networks, or CNN, or places where we would catch the more informed strata of society, if you will. My theory is that who congressmen listen to is that 5 to 10% of the people that are paying attention. And I think we all know that not everyone is paying attention, and that this will allow some limited advertising targeted to reach those opinion leaders in the various targeted communities. So I think also we could make good use of the money by preparing video footage, and I don't think it has to be an expensive, elaborate effort. I think we have a lot of in-house talent within state government that could be used in this effort. And in fact, I think a less slick message will go over better with the people that we are trying to reach, and that we don't want to give the message of opulence or, you know, having a lot of money to throw around. And so I think this is an appropriate level of funding and will allow a lot of participation by Alaskans, and will also allow us to do some targeted media placement.
We're waiting.
the other commitment. I perhaps I've made my position clear. I see this action acknowledging or acquiescing in what is a continued, economic colonialism by the continental United States via Alaska. And I didn't expect that from Commonwealth North, especially. I really didn't. That's all I can say, because we are in a colonial position via the United States. We are forbidden to sell our oil on the world market. Our resources are subject to management and control by the continental United States. Alaskan money was used to subsidize Noriega with that damn pipeline across Panama, for example. And this is just a continuation. I see that in the continuation. I think we should expect terms. We should expect terms.
Well, I totally agree with Representative Kopanen. I think that we have been let ourselves become a colony again. But there's two battle fronts I see. One is to get access to the resources. The other is the terms. And I'd like to repeat what I said yesterday. The governor is strongly in your corner, Nilo, in this area, in terms of everything that we're saying to Congress and the President and everyone in Washington, D.C.
Any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, we have the amendment to the amendment number 11. And the amendment to the amendment reads that the sum of $3 million is appropriated from the general fund to the Office of the Governor for a national education effort to gain the approval for the opening of the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge for oil and gas development. Clerk, would you please take roll?
Is the motion to replace 5 with 2?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
It's the amendment to the amendment.
There is continued objection. Question. Secretary will call the roll.
Representative Palmer?
Yes.
Representative Boyer?
Yes.
Representative Barnes?
Yes.
Representative Brown?
Yes.
Representative Jacko?
No.
Representative Kopanen?
Yes, for the reduction.
Representative Larson?
No.
Representative Phillips?
Yes.
Representative Sharp?
Yes.
Representative Navarre?
Yes.
Representative McClain?
Yes.
Is there objection to amendment number 11?
Yes.
There is objection. Secretary will call the roll.
Which is now restate the amendment.
$3 million.
The amendment is $3 million.
Just for the record.
Representative Boyer?
Yes.
Representative Barnes?
Yes.
Representative Brown?
Yes.
Representative Jacko?
Yes.
Representative Kopanen?
No.
Representative Larson?
Yes.
Representative Phillips?
Yes.
Representative Sharp?
Yes.
Representative Ulmer?
No.
Representative Navarre?
Yes.
Representative McClain?
Yes.
Motion carried. Amendment number 11 has been adopted.
Thank you.
There's intent language that I intend to offer, which says no person or entity that participates in the development of the RFP for ANWR promotion shall bid on the requested proposal. And that's just to try to keep it. Does the administration have any objection to that?
I'm not particularly familiar with the RFP process, so I don't know the legal ramifications of whether it has to be open to all bidders or not.
Yes,
so
it
just
mostly letter intent.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes. Representative Brown.
You're saying you want an RFP process on the selection of the contractor?
Pardon?
What is it? Could you repeat it?
That no person or entity that participates in the development of the request for proposal for the Anwar production shall bid on the request for proposal.
Oh,
well. I support the language.
I support the language.
So moved.
Their objection. Without objection, the amendment is adopted.
Thank you.
Prevents a conflict of
interest. Right. Mm-hmm. That was the concern.
Okay.
We are on amendment number 19 by Representative McLean. Representative McLean.
Yes, a very small sum of money for $40,000. I'd like to move the amendment number 19, and it's for the City of Coxsackie for snow removal.
Check, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Boyer.
I am going to propose an amendment to the amendment. Let me just pass it out. If I may speak to it while it's coming around.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. If we open the supplemental up to appropriations for snow removal, I feel compelled to offer this amendment, which would provide sums of money, $549,000 to the borough and $309,000 to the Fairbanks School District, and $775,000 and some change, obviously, in all these cases, to the City of Fairbanks for extraordinary costs associated with the heaviest snowfall in the history in the interior. And for the same reasons that we funded in the early supplemental snow removal money for the Department of Transportation, the city and the borough and the school district all are similarly situated. We've spent money that would otherwise be available to us for the balance of the spring to deal with potholes and other roof repairs, lots of things attendant to the snow that just won't get done now. And it causes an additional burden for maintenance that we just won't have the money to take care of. And I just felt that if we opened it up and started addressing snow funds for other communities, that we clearly had to look at the rest of the state, and Fairbanks is where I represent, so I offer the amendment to the amendment. There is objection, Representative Barnes, and then Larson.
Mr. Chairman, speaking to this amendment, you might recall that last year, not this winter, the winter before, that in the Matsu Borough and the Anchorage area, we had the deepest snowfall in some 30 years. And there was a request for additional funds because of that snowfall, but we didn't get them. So I just don't think it would be fair to give it to Fairbanks since we didn't get it for Anchorage.
Any other questions? Senator Larson.
Yes. I'm going to speak on my district because I know that best. Last year, there was a tremendous snowfall. This year, there was even more, believe it or not, especially up in the northern sections. Now, last year, we had lots of requests for additional money. And I stuck my neck out last year saying that what had to be done is the road service areas had to tax themselves in order to sufficiently maintain their roads during the wintertime. Now, out of the 19 road service areas, 16 of them are now taxing themselves. And I didn't hear any complaints from any of those 16 this year because through taxing themselves, they had sufficient revenues to plow their roads. I did hear from two of the three who did not tax themselves. And I told them no, I wasn't going to support them, and therefore I'm not going to support any of these amendments.
Thank you, Representative Larson. I also would mention that I read the Fairbanks had a proposal to adopt a 1% sales tax in order to help pay some of these costs, and Fairbanks was turned down by the council. The concern that I have is that, you know, we have municipal governments who are continually coming to the state and saying, this is very important, we've got to do it, but they are unwilling, both in our two largest areas of the state, Fairbanks and Anchorage, are unwilling to tax themselves, and for that reason I will not be supporting the amendment to the amendment. Is there further discussion?
Question.
Representative Brown.
I